What does it take to sell your business? In today's podcast, I speak to Paul Miller and Kellyanne Fideo of Amazing Exits. We talk about goal setting, planning, mistakes, and best practices so you can get an amazing exit when you sell your Amazon business. This is the My Amazon Guy podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Pope, founder of the agency My Amazon Guy. Tune in each week to learn how to grow your Amazon sales. All right, I'm now joined by Paul and Kellyanne. Thanks for coming on the podcast today.
Thanks so much, Stephen, for having us. It's a pleasure. We were excited to have you on our podcast a couple weeks back.
Yes. Great to be here.
All right, thank you too, Paul. Well, cool. Let's first tee you up with our audience and talk a little about your backgrounds. We're going to be talking about what it takes to make a good exit on a business. So we'll start with you first, Kellyanne. What makes you an expert on this question?
Well, first and foremost, I just had a successful exit. I sold my business back in February of 2020 is when it closed. And there was quite a journey leading up to that process. And, you know, Paul has also been a student of exit planning. I'll let him talk about that. But Paul and I have come together and really want to get the word out to Amazon sellers that you're sitting on a really big asset and, you know, you should really consider, you know, how valuable it is and be prepared to sell it when the time is right.
And so your particular business ended up becoming my Amazon Guy client during that transition.
That's right. That's right. I know. Crazy, huh? So yes, the gentleman who purchased my company, he's an entrepreneur, and he decided after probably, I think, trying to learn how to do everything himself that it takes to manage an Amazon brand, he decided, and he's a serial entrepreneur. I know he's got a lot of, you know, irons in the fire. So he decided to hire the best and hire you to take over Amazon brand management.
Well, I appreciate the endorsement there. We've definitely had fun working on your account. All right, cool.
Don't divulge too much information.
Yeah. Well, at the end of the day, it's all about the best practices, grow traffic, improve the conversion rates, rinse and repeat, right?
Exactly.
Okay. And for you, Paul, so you are currently building a business to plan your exit. So tell us a little about your background.
That's right. So Kelly and I have been friends since 2015, selling and growing our businesses on Amazon together. And I was having a lot of success. And along the way, about 2018, I started thinking about exit planning. And Kelly was doing the same about that time. So we were sharing resources, podcasts, books, different experts that we found in the field. And together, we both were kind of struggling with a lack of resources available for really exit planning. She took her exit before I did. As a matter of fact, in my exit planning, I probably had an optimal time there in 2018, which would have been the best if I had been prepared. So after Kelly left her, you know, has sold her business, we got together and started talking about it and said, you know, wouldn't it be cool if we could put together a group of experts on exit planning and kind of use my company as a case study to come in and talk about best practices in exit planning. So she's kind of the expert, not kind of, is the expert. And
I'm a work in progress.
Apprentice. Actually, I haven't thought about it that way, but I'm kind of the apprentice here. And we're using this as a platform, our podcast, AmazingExits.com, to interview and learn from the best people in the industry on planning my exit. And hopefully we'll be able to have a live case study and our audience can come through my journey all the way to the exit.
All right. So this is an open mic question for either of you then. So you teed us up perfectly. What does it take to have an amazing exit?
Boy, that's a loaded question. I'll start with that one. There are a lot of things, Stephen, but there's some fundamentals. So, you know, first, just to put it into some context, you know, the reason why exit planning, because anything with the word planning does not sound that exciting, does it? Right. But
I thought Amazon was supposed to be passive income.
Yeah. You tell me when you find the person that's able to do it passively. And I'll give that person $1 million because they deserve it if they can make it passive. We all know it's on the active side, definitely when we're doing these businesses. I mean, the ROI and the return on investment can absolutely be phenomenal on an e-commerce and Amazon-based business, but it does require a lot of active work. But really, the most money that you're ever going to put in your pocket comes the day that you sell your business. And so, like I said earlier, you know, running these e-commerce businesses, we really have created these, you know, monumental assets. And for most of us, it might be the valuable asset that we have. And also for most of us in our financial or our wealth, you know, portfolio, if you want to call it, we know what our assets are worth, right? We know what our house is worth. If we own any rental properties, we know what those are worth. If we own any, you know, mutual funds, if we have money and, you know, qualified retirement plans, we know what those are worth. But not many Amazon entrepreneurs know what the heck their business is worth. And so we really
is that because like a multiple problem or just like the amount of work it takes to produce? Why is that?
I think it's a lot of things. So first comes down to knowing your numbers and having clean bookkeeping. So having a really good e-commerce bookkeeper, handle your books, don't do it yourself. Even if you are a bookkeeper, it's not a good use of your time. You're better off spending that time, you know, scaling your company, adding more products, increasing your profitability. But you've got to start with that foundation of having clean financials and records so that at all times, you know what your bottom line is. What your bottom line is your net profit. You know, some people call that seller's discretionary earnings. Some people call it EBITDA, which stands for earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization, which is really
just— mouthful.
Yeah, it's just a fancy investment banking term for net profit plus any add backs, which are, you know, uncommon one-time non-recurring expenses that a future, you know, owner or buyer of your business would not have to incur. And so you want to have that bottom line as healthy as possible. And so many Amazon entrepreneurs and e-commerce entrepreneurs and business owners in general are so focused on the top line. You know, oh, I'm a seven-figure seller. I'm an eight-figure seller. I say it all the time too. You know, I have it on my LinkedIn profile. I was a seven-figure seller because that's what gets the attention, right? But it's your bottom line that needs to be, you know, up to snuff in order to sell your company.
Maybe we should change this up and say, I have seven-figure net profits.
Yeah, or you know, seven-figure EBITDA. Yeah, if you've got seven-figure EBITDA, you know, you're able to attract a lot of sophisticated buyers, private equity, strategics, you know, so that's really where it's at, is your bottom line net profit.
I got a feeling we'd be seeing a lot fewer people showing their numbers if we were always only talking about profit.
That's probably true. Well, cool. So walk me through your thoughts on this, Paul. What makes an amazing exit? Now, I realize you're still working on your amazing exit, but what do you hope to achieve?
So what I hope to achieve is in the long term is what I call financial independence. And when Kellyanne talks about knowing the value of your business, and something that we talk about on the podcast is reverse engineering your goal. So my goal being financial independence means, you know, what do I need at the end of the day to walk away with net proceeds from the business after the business sells, you know, after I pay all the bills, everything, including any loans that I have outstanding. And so I have to go through a process of my own to figure out what's it going to be based on my personal situation, you know, finishing, getting my kids through college, paying off my mortgage, whatever it might be, plus the lifestyle that I want to live for the rest of my life. That's what I call financial independence. Now, preparing for that doesn't mean that I have to execute that, right? I may decide to prepare my business for sale, and I may decide I love the cash flow and optimize the value of my business, which is also going to optimize the cash flow in my business at the same time. But for me, it's about finding what my end of the day net proceeds number is, and then figuring out how to reverse engineer my business to achieve that number.
So I like that goal you mentioned, that financial independence. We all have something that gets us up out of bed every day, right? So this is a question straight out of the book about TED Talks. This guy went through and analyzed what made a great communicator, what made a great TED Talk. And so this is the second time I've been able to ask this question. So we'll start with you, Kellyanne. What makes your heart sing?
Oh, I love that question. And that, you know, that hits the nail on the head, Stephen. It's, you know, for Paul, his goals are going to be different from my goals and your goals. For example, Stephen, you've shared with us that you never want to sell your Amazon brand management.
Building the hold. Even though, like, I'm telling you, like, once every other week on LinkedIn, some private equity is like hitting me up, and I'm like, guys, not interested.
You know what? But knowing the value of your business, you're able to entertain an out of the blue offer. And I guarantee you that there might come a day, I mean, never say never, forever is a long time. So you want to always be prepared for that out of blue offer, that pie in the sky offer, and know what the value of your business is. And so as Paul said, you know, for him, he's building his business so that he can achieve complete financial freedom. And I think we all define financial freedom differently. I mean, I define financial freedom as being able to do whatever you want, whenever you want, with whoever you want, and never having to work again a day in your life if you don't choose to. But for most of us, I think as entrepreneurs, we don't ever really truly want to retire. We always want to be active doing something, right? And so, you know, for me, my goals with selling my business were not to achieve complete financial freedom. It was to de-risk, to take chips off the table, to have some financial independence, which we now do because it was a big sum of money that landed in our bank account. But I'm just getting started with all the things that I want to do in life. And so it's different for everybody. And that's one thing that we talk about on our podcast and with our partner, Ryan Tansom, who has a course called Intentional Growth, is building your business with intention and building it with an end in mind, because that's just going to allow you to create a highly valuable and sellable business that you can sell at any time when you are ready or not at all. That was a lot. Sorry.
No, that's good. So when you said when you build a business with intention, is it intention to sell or intention? What do you mean by that?
Intention in terms of what do you want out of your business long term and why? Do you want it to be spitting out $100,000 in cash flow every month and you're going to live off that and that's going to fund the lifestyle that you want? You're going to look at it in relationship to all your other assets that you have. You're going to look at it in relationship to retirement planning, in terms of legacy planning, all the things that are very individualized to each person and entrepreneur, doing that all intentionally from the get-go.
We had an army chaplain living in Germany on our podcast 2 episodes ago, and the whole theme of that podcast was about perseverance. The reason why I bring it up here is because his end goal was to explode a nonprofit and help people, because he's an army chaplain. That's what he wants to do and give back. So that intention makes perfect sense. All right, let's toss that question back to you, Paul. So what makes your heart sing? And is it financial independence, or is there something bigger that you're seeking?
It really comes down to freedom of choice. And that's what I think the financial independence gives you, is the freedom of many, many choices. So that's kind of what really makes my heart sing. I want to be able to, if I decide that I want to take a year with my wife and sail around the world, let's do that. Or do I want to get into a coaching program, create a coaching program for veteran entrepreneurs, which is something that I'm interested in. So it's all about that financial independence. Isn't about retiring, you know, and becoming a couch potato. It's, for me, it's going to give me the choices to do whatever I want, both personally and professionally.
All right. So I like that. Well, before we start talking exit best practices, I want to ask one more kind of generic question, if you will. So we mentioned the term serial entrepreneur, and it's an interesting term. What do you think makes a serial entrepreneur?
Well, for me, it's a bunch of screw ups. No, for me, I call serial entrepreneur someone who's just really driven to kind of be self-employed, start businesses. You know, I have personally, after I got out of 11 years in the Marine Corps, I went to work for one company. And then after that, started a video production company, which evolved into a streaming media company. I exited that and I became a restaurant franchisee, built a 3-store franchise, exited that, started Amazon. And so now I'm on my third time, which hopefully third time's a charm. Those were all exits. I can't say they were amazing exits, though. I'm still in search of the amazing exit.
Well, I once exited a business, but it honestly felt more like just quitting a job, right? Like I basically turned the assets over to the partner and walked away with like 30 grand in cash, which was, you know, okay, whatever. But we had built a $500,000 a year business, And it was surprising how much work we put into it for how little I walked away with, and he kept the assets. So I understand what you mean when you said, you don't know what an amazing exit looks like. For me at that time, it was just get rid of the headache. So everybody exits for a different reason. I like the financial independence aspect as well. Kellyanne, anything to add on serial entrepreneurship?
Yeah, Paul really said it very wisely when he said just a ton of mistakes. You're not an entrepreneur unless you've made a ton of mistakes and hopefully learned from them. And boy, I've made so many mistakes. I made mistakes during my exit as well, you know, but I'm always that type of person that's, I'm very optimistic. And I'm always, you know, I've just got an insatiable appetite for learning and knowledge. And like, for example, now I'm really passionate about real estate investing. So I've been, you know, doing everything I can to become an expert in that. And not only by learning, but doing, implementing. And so it's just, it's learning, but then implementing and doing that just over and over again, really makes you, you know, what I would consider to be a serial entrepreneur.
Well, very good. All right. So let's turn our focus over to best practices. So this is the meat and potatoes of the podcast today. What, you know, you mentioned have your books in order is probably the most important thing you need to do to sell a business. I think that one is the easy, obvious answer, if not the hardest thing to do. And using a third party expert outside of your business helps add some clarity to that question. So walk me through some of the general best practices for exiting a business. When's the best time to do it? You know, Paul, you mentioned you missed your timing. Maybe we talk about that too. Let's dive into some of this. All right. So first question then, what are the general best practices to exit a business?
There's a lot of them, but you know, to keep it really kind of streamlined and basic, you know, and we go over these in Ryan Tansom's Intentional Growth course, but the first one we've already talked about, knowing your drivers, knowing what you want from your business long-term and why. And then the second, and I'll kind of focus here for a little bit, are your financial targets. You know, what amount of money, as Paul said, do you need to hit your bank account that's net proceeds after everything is said and done, after you pay off all your debt, after you pay lawyer's fees, after you pay broker's fees or M&A advisor fees, after you pay accountant fees, what's going to go into your bank account? So taxes, yes. Knowing all of that. So that goes into knowing your financial targets. And just to take a step back for a second, Stephen, you had asked, you know, when is the right time to start planning? Well, now and always. This doesn't need to be something that you should look at as, oh, just another chore I have to do. Like, this should be an exciting thing. Like, I am going to know at all times what my business is worth. So I can entertain that out of the blue offer, or gosh forbid, something were to happen, come along in life where I needed to sell my business. Because if you're not prepared and then you do need to sell your business for whatever reason, you're not going to get maximum value. In fact, you're probably, you know, get taken advantage of. So we really want to emphasize like that this should be something fun that you should want to learn about. And it doesn't need to take a lot of time, you know, listen to podcasts like Amazing Exits and all of that kind of stuff and get in touch with us. And, you know, we can be your guide along the way. But going back to financial targets, you know, there's a lot of things that affect the value of the multiple that's going to be used to evaluate your business. And so we talked earlier about net profit being like the most important thing. Well, to that is applied a multiple. You know, generally in the Amazon e-commerce space, what it's typically been over these past few years is anywhere from like a 2 to 4 multiple. Okay. And that's if you're selling to like an acquisition entrepreneur, or, you know, it's not a strategic or a private equity deal, just a, you know, straight deal, maybe under 10 million in enterprise value, and somebody's using SBA financing. So with that multiple, there's many things that you need to focus on. And this is not an exhaustive list. I'm just going to name a few. So you want to have positive yearly sales trends. You want to be able to show growth and growth, clear growth opportunities, because nobody wants to buy a business that's stagnant, declining, or doesn't have opportunities for growth.
What do you mean? I shouldn't let my best seller go out of stock and you know, say, screw it, I'll sell my business in 6 months.
Yeah, that probably is not going to work, because the most important time period that a potential buyer, I mean, they're looking at historically your sales, you know, from the time that you started the business, but really that past trailing 12 months is going to be really what they're looking at. And you have to keep your eye on that ball from the time that you list that business to the time that it closes. If things change during that time, it can totally kill a deal. So I'm going to stop there because that was a lot of stuff, and let you ask some follow-up questions.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of made fun of the perseverance question because, 2020 has been a hard year for everybody, right?
Sure has.
And so a lot of people, they're thinking to themselves, maybe I should just give up. My cheerleading answer to that question is no, be consistent. It is in your best interest to always be consistent. Maybe you can't give 100% of your effort today, but it would be far better to give 30% of your effort every single day instead of going 0% for a 2-week span and everything blows up. So, you know, that's my thought on that question. But I like the fact you mentioned you got to have consistent growth, right? Like, I think there's some really importance to that because that consistency is attractive because stability makes it easier, right? So like much harder to run a seasonality business where every Christmas you're doing $1 or $2 million in December, but in June you do $5,000, right? Like, what kind of person wants to buy that business? Harder to manage versus the business that just consistently does $300K every month. I know which one I would buy or pick if all things were equal from a top line standpoint. Or maybe I like to go fly out on, the Cayman Islands and hang out there for 6 months of the year. And then during, you know, Q3 and Q4, I just run a business. I don't know, whatever your preference might be. All right. So there's a lot of good best practices to think about inside of what you mentioned. What about diversification? We haven't touched on that one yet. Is that an important best practice?
I think so. I think diversification, not only of product mix, but also of sales channels, but not at the sake of what we like to say is sacrificing the golden goose. So if your skill set is Amazon and you don't have the skill set to go to retail or to drive traffic to your Shopify site or to work with influencers, or you don't have a team that can do that, you know, don't, this again is all about being intentional. Don't just go off willy-nilly and do that at the sake of letting your Amazon sales slip. So the more diversified that you can be will definitely increase or have the ability to increase your multiple for sure.
Yeah, I'll talk about that a little bit also. When it comes to, and you ask yourself, why is it important to diversify? And to the buyer, it's all about risk, right? So they're trying to mitigate their risk. And if they know that 90% of your sales are on Amazon, that's a lot of risk. We all know that people can get suspended and things can happen on Amazon. So that's the reason that a lot of people want to diversify. Now, I will tell you that I went crazy on diversification in one of my biggest years. And I spent a lot of time and energy growing other sales channels, Amazon EU, Shopify, ton of Facebook advertising, Walmart.com. You know, I really did take my eye off the ball, my golden goose. Amazon was kind of going autopilot. I shouldn't say I took my eye off the ball, but I didn't give it the attention that it needed while I was growing all these other channels, just going after top line growth. And that's definitely a mistake because at the end of the year, and the end of this tremendous year I had with incredible top line sales, guess what? I didn't have any profitability. It's because I spent all this time and energy and advertising dollars trying to build value in my company by diversifying sales channels.
I think diversity is another, you know, I'll add my 2 cents to that. Adding additional channels outside of Amazon, countries, whatever it might be, I think are good. Also focal points as well. Back to that growth consistency question, another thought that occurred to me is that another thing that you might want to have potentially, you guys tell me, is maybe a growth plan to hand off to that buyer. Is that something you guys could speak to?
Absolutely. That is super, super important. A potential buyer is going to want to see those growth opportunities, plenty of meat on the bone. And the clearer that you can lay that out, that trajectory for them, the more, value that they're going to put into that. So absolutely.
What should that look like? Like, should I have a list of 10 products I thought about launching, and here's how I launched the previous 40, and you know, a full SOP plan, or what would you recommend to do?
I would say the more detailed, the better. And you know, when you're working with a really good business broker or investment banking firm to sell your business, you know, they'll help you put this together as part of your marketing package, or they should be. The M&A advisor that I use to help me sell my business, they put together a very comprehensive, you know, what they called an offering memorandum, but basically just a really exquisite marketing package with all of these selling points. And of course, that came with input from me. But yeah, the more detailed you can be, the better.
Well, detail definitely is in the, I guess the devil's in the details is what I was trying to say. I don't know why I was going there. But detail's good. Let's go with that. All right. So let's talk timing. You'd mentioned always be thinking of an exit and just to be ready just in case. But Paul, you had mentioned that you missed your timing. Let's go into that storyline. Why did you feel like you missed your exit timing, and what are you going to do about it?
Well, I'll tell you, I had, you know, tremendous growth in say 4 years in a row, 40% year over year, you know, owned the category that I was in, a category that we created. And I share on the podcast, my company is Cozy Phones. And I was very focused on my top year on top line growth. And as I told you, diversifying into different channels. In the meantime, and one of the things that I didn't notice quick enough was the fact that I had a lot of copycat competitors coming on Amazon behind me. And so all of a sudden I realized at the end of my biggest year that I had a ton of competitors in the wings.
Taking
market share. Uh-huh. And we have IP, by the way, and we're still executing an IP strategy to get those guys off of there. But it's not overnight. And I say that because I don't want any of the listeners to get into my category. So if you're thinking about it, forget about it.
it's interesting. I actually am very public with what I sell on Amazon as well. And it's I sell funny wine glasses. I've got the number one funny wine glass on Amazon. Good luck if you want to deal with breakage and how to ship glasses. So
right.
Each person, each category has its own competitive advantage. And I do mine to test, so I can go out to my agency clients mm-hmm. and test and show them, hey, virtual bundles, those things sucked. Don't do those. But right. Hey, this NARF thing, not a pinky in the brain reference, but remote fulfillment up in Canada, hey, go do that. That's a good thing. Mm-hmm. So Paul, you missed the timing because you had some competitors creep in, and now you're like, well, I want to rethink this and replan. How do you go about figuring that out?
Yeah. So just to clarify a little bit, so you really need to sell on the upslope, right? When you're seeing year over year growth, month over month growth, you're adding to your SKUs, you have a pipeline of SKUs, and you have profitability too. So that's why I say the timing wasn't quite right for me, because I started to see a decrease in sales, and I hadn't had any, I was reinvesting everything in the business. And so I didn't show a lot of profitability. But if I had paid a little bit more attention to what was happening in the competition and were showing more on the bottom line, it would have been a better position to sell at that time. So now it's kind of a reset. And I will be honest with you, a big portion of our plan is based on an IP strategy that we're executing to take out these other sellers. And to be honest, most of them are foreign based, and
I'll say it. They're from China.
I
hold no punches on in my political commentary. I think Jeff Bezos should pay taxes, and I think we should regulate China. It's all out. All
well,
right,
there are some really interesting things happening right now, and you know, as we're recording this podcast, for example, last week, I think it was California Supreme Court made a decision regarding product liability insurance.
Yes, this is an interesting development.
Yeah, which we believe is going to flow down, I believe is going to flow down to individual sellers, where Amazon is going to actually enforce their policy to require sellers to get proof of product liability insurance. And to me, that's a good thing. That means that, you know, I already carry it because I'm a, you know, white hat seller, and I have to have it for my business anyway. I really don't think my Chinese competitors are going to go out there and get a $5 million product liability insurance and give it to Amazon.
So right now, Amazon doesn't require it, but who knows? Maybe they will soon. Go look at Wayfair. Wayfair requires it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They have to. It's ridiculous that they don't. It's absolutely ridiculous. So it's going to happen.
That's a component, you know, having IP and being smart about your business is a component of kind of rebuilding our brand. And the other thing that we've done early on, and I share this in many podcasts, is, you know, I have got into licensing. So I have licenses with Nickelodeon, with Sesame Street, Batman, and others to help build a moat around our brand. So we're, you know, going in harder on the licensing, you know, kind of reposition our product as the premium original that it is, and just keep fighting away and eliminating these knockoffs and copycats through our IP strategy.
Well, I think you've got a plan, and that's half the battle. And the question is, does the plan work, or do we need a counter plan? So I'm sure you've got A, B, and C counter plans ready to go too, especially if you guys are always thinking about exiting. I'm sure you've got lots and lots of alternative ideas. All right.
Can I just interject a second, Stephen? I want to just kind of comment on what Paul just shared, because I think what he did is a great summary of what every business owner should be doing. Is now he's laser focused. He knows exactly what he needs to do to increase the value of his business. And he's focusing on just one strategy, which is creating barriers to entry, right? He's got, you know, IP, he's got licensing. He's going all in on that as being the big needle mover to, you know, increasing the value of his business. And so I really want to emphasize that, because like before that, Paul was all over the place, right? And most of us are. I was too. You know, I'm going to go sell on Shopify. I'm going to go try to get into retail. I'm going to go take this course on Pinterest marketing. I'm going to go do this. And now he's laser focused on what he needs to do.
Yeah. And I'll just add one more thing to that, Kelly. I dropped off a lot of the other initiatives that I was working on. You know, I can tell you that building a Shopify business is very, very difficult and expensive.
Completely different.
And we were successful in it, but we spent a ton of money doing that and a ton of energy. Same thing with Amazon Europe and some of the other channels. So it was really refocusing all resources back on the Golden Goose and, you know, rebuilding the business from there.
It's interesting. This topic has come up a lot in my LinkedIn feed in the last 2 days. There was somebody talking about starting their own business, but not choosing not to use Amazon. And there are certain demographics and cultures who don't want to shop on Amazon. However, the overall post that had been made on LinkedIn is like, you guys got to count your blessings. Like, selling on Amazon is way easier than selling off of Amazon. Now, with that said, I believe Amazon's entering its maturity phase, the product life cycle, it's getting harder. There's a lot of ridiculous barriers that Amazon is putting in place. And when we say, hey, we think there should be product insurance, that's just another barrier that we're suggesting to go put on other sellers, right? Mm-hmm. But it's in the best interest of the customer. It's on brand for Amazon. It'll probably happen, my prediction. Maybe in the next 6 months, in fact. Every time we see California come out of the regulation, it's just like they are cracking down on Amazon constantly. So like, I got a client, they sell a pet related item, and they got banned from selling in California because their packaging said that they were biodegradable. California has a state law that you cannot sell items that say they're biodegradable, because in reality, biodegradable means more biodegradable than like a typical plastic, and they are tired of litter. right? So those kinds of laws and barriers to entry seem to be popping up more and more. But nonetheless, I think we actually have an alignment on the product insurance angle.
As a citizen of the People's Republic of California, I feel very sorry for all business owners. It's, you know, I love where I live in California, Southern California, by the beach. But man, do we have to deal with a lot of bull.
Regulation is the PC term, we'll say. All right. So interesting topics we've hit here. I actually don't have a good follow-up question. Where do you guys want to go from here?
Well, you know, we could talk more about some of the other ways to increase multiple, you know,
Let's do that. I just
people hit on like a few. And I wanted to highlight something that Paul mentioned earlier that I don't think I quite highlighted. I've talked a lot about you've got to show growth, but, you know, there's no perfect time to sell your business. But with this planning and with this proactive mindset, you could be prepared so that you can sell it when you're on a high note, and you have to sell it when you're on a high note. When I say you have to, that's when you're going to get maximum value for it. You know, if you want to go just, you know, have a fire sale for your brand and make pennies on the dollar, sure, you can go do that. But for most of us, this is our biggest asset and we want to maximize how much money we can get out of it.
Kelly, sorry, I'm cutting you off a little bit here.
No, it's okay.
You were about to talk about valuations, but let's also talk about the types of buyers that are out there.
Absolutely.
Because multiples is multiple applies to only certain type of buyers, right?
Yes. So
walk us through, what are the types of buyers?
Yeah. So, and this is another, you know, thing that, you can get educated on in the intentional growth course that we offer that was created by Ryan Tansom, and knowing your exit options. And so, you know, for an Amazon or e-commerce entrepreneur, there's going to be, you know, a few core types of buyers that are going to buy your business. Number one is going to be an acquisition entrepreneur. So that is somebody that's usually using SBA financing. Usually it's, you know, a deal that has an enterprise value of 10 million and below. And the buyer is either, you know, an entrepreneur or a corporate refugee who's looking to, you know, basically get out of corporate America. And maybe they have some funds saved up and they're using SBA financing to purchase the deal. And then we've got these, the next option are these, you know, we call them aggregators. I'm not sure what they call themselves, but they're these FBA aggregators. So Thrasio is a big one out there. We had somebody on our podcast from BigCommerce. So these are companies that are going out and acquiring Amazon FBA businesses. And they are not only acquiring them, but they're fully operating them. And I think like Thrasio was just valued at like $1 billion. So they obviously see the value in Amazon FBA businesses. So that's another option.
I think a lot of companies are seeing some mergers, acquisitions, because the difficulty level of selling on Amazon went from like non-existent from 3 or 4 years ago to, oh, now it's hard. And so the increase in sophistication needed, you're going to see people take resources and put them together.
Right.
And then the sellers, the reason they want to sell is because they don't like the sophistication. They want to move on. Right. So I think that's worth noting. I think we've seen more mergers and acquisitions this year than in the previous 4 or 5 years combined. I actually don't know my data. I'm just believing
that. No, but what you just mentioned is another exit option, and that's a strategic acquirer. So, you know, a strategic is basically a buyer that's decided to acquire a business in order to strengthen, you know, their own existing competitive advantage, like you mentioned. So, and typically when you're dealing with a strategic acquisition, you can kind of throw these 2 to 4 multiples out the window because you can get a much larger multiple, but you know, it really does depend on your enterprise value and your bottom line EBITDA. If, you know, we're talking usually, you know, north of $10 million in enterprise value to attract a strategic type of acquirer, sometimes less, but that's generally what you're going to find. And then, you know, kind of similar and where you also could get more, you know, basically bang for your buck with your multiple is with private equity. So there are private equity funds, family offices that are buying these types of businesses. They, you know, have somebody run them for a few years and then they're going to sell. And a lot of times, you know, the owner can stay on with a piece of equity and take another bite at the apple with their equity. So those are the main exit options for an Amazon e-commerce business.
And you mentioned that the purchase could be in a couple of different forms, right? So like the one that you just mentioned where the owner may stay on to some extent. A lot of sellers just want to be like, I'm out, guys.
Exactly.
I'm out. I want my paycheck and I'm out. So So could you walk me through like options? So
yeah,
those two make sense to me where I'm out or I stay on, but there's probably some in between. And
there's
maybe
lots of different options and it can get very creative, but this all goes back to Stephen of knowing what you want from your business and what you want from your exit. And so what, knowing from the get-go, what are your non-negotiables? Like knowing that when I sell this business, I don't want to have anything to do with it for the rest of my life. Or when I sell this business, I'm only willing to stay on for 60 days to help transition. Or when I sell this business, I want to maintain a 20% ownership stake and, you know, help run it. So knowing those things, there's lots of different ways and creative deal structures to do this. So it really just depends on the, you know, acquirer and, you know, what you negotiate during the process.
That makes sense. Where do you think the most common one is? Do you think most sellers want to be in?
Most sellers want to get all of their cash up front. You know, who doesn't? Yeah.
Is that realistic though?
It depends, but I would say count on no. It really depends. I think that, like for example, the aggregators like Thrasio, I'm pretty certain they don't pay all cash up front. There is some kind of a, you know, performance-based or earnout, what it's called. But I'm sure you've had him on your podcast or them on your podcast. They could speak to that. You know, private equity and strategics, that could very well require a lot of different types of, you know, negotiating points in the deal as to what kind of cash you're going to receive up front and what is going to be, you know, incentive-based or performance-based later on in an earnout. So you typically want as much cash as possible up front. If you're selling to an acquisition entrepreneur, for example, who's using SBA financing, usually, and I'm pretty sure this is still a requirement, but the SBA is going to require that the seller basically do some financing. So usually about 10% of the purchase price, the seller's going to have to carry as a promissory note. That's what I had to do when I sold my business. So basically what that means is 10% of the purchase price, I won't get paid back for some time. But I got most of the cash that I wanted up front. So that kind of, that promissory note's kind of like the gravy for me. And that's, you know, I knew that going into the deal.
That makes sense. Okay, cool. So we're getting towards the end of our podcast today. What are the most, like, what's like the number one most important thing people should think of, take away from the podcast today? We'll start with you, Paul. What do you think?
Well, I think for us, and it's a theme of our podcasts and our efforts, is to plan whether you plan to exit or not, whether you intend to exit or not. If you build your business like you're going to sell it, and there's actually a great book out there called Built to Sell by John Warlow, you'll run a great business anyway. So it's about planning so that you can run a great business. And if you decide to sell, great. And if something in life happens, you know, and you're no longer able to run your business, at least you're in a position to, you know, take full advantage of that exit.
And Kellyanne, what do you think?
Well, I'm going to go back to this intentional principle and being intentional with your time and your money and your energy and your resources and, you know, really trying to hone in on which strategies you need to implement to grow the value of your business, your Amazon business, so that it's, you know, achieving maximum profitability and it's attractive as possible to a potential buyer. Because by doing that, as Paul said, that's going to make it a just cash flowing business.
Well, very good, guys. I appreciate you guys coming on the My Amazon Guy podcast today. If somebody wants to get in touch with you guys, then go to amazingexits.com.
Yes. Right now we are just getting ready to launch our website and our podcast on September 9th, but they can go to amazingexits.com and they can sign up to be notified of when we go live.
Well, wonderful. We'll look forward to seeing you guys develop this out. And I'm excited to see our podcast where I come on to yours also get released in due time. And it's always fun to have a podcast swap because you get to see the experts grill each other one way and then the other. It's always fun to do that. So hopefully those that watched today's podcast or listened in will follow suit and join us over on the Amazing Exits to talk about Amazon best practices.
Thank you so much, Stephen, for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you too, Paul. Thank you, Kellyanne. All right, so that's the My Amazon Guy podcast today. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button. This was the My Amazon Guy podcast with Stephen Pope. Each episode helps you grow your sales on Amazon through ideas on traffic and conversion rate improvements. Hit that subscribe button right now to tune in each week. And if you need more help, go to myamazonguy.com.